The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Wow, what a weekend, What a time to catch up on news, because there's been so much going on over the last few days. Let's start with the latest on the news wise this morning, is that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett apparently has tested positive for corona. And we understand that he's doing okay, that he's apparently planning to work from home today. There are a few things that he needs to do. There are a few items on his agenda. So we hope that he will be well, and that he will be able to get on and carry on matters of state, which, of course, he's very busy with at the moment.
Absolutely, and of course, wishing him well. Terrible, terrible story yesterday. Two Israelis killed, several others wounded in a terror attack last night in Hadera. Another one, and another ISIS-claimed one.
Yeah, so there are video images that are available online for those people who are interested to look this up. I actually have had a chance to look at some of the video footage. These days, it's quite difficult to move anywhere without being filmed somehow, because cameras, of course, are up in all public spaces, and it's very, very difficult to move around without getting filmed in some way, shape or form. And the video footage that I've seen of last night's incident is really scary. Two individuals seen at a bus stop. Cold-blooded is just, you know, the term that comes to mind, literally taking out automatic weapons, moving towards a group of civilians who were going about their daily business as they would do on a Sunday evening, and literally just beginning to fire without any compunction whatsoever towards these civilians. In the process of this particular incident last night, unfortunately, two Israeli border police officers were killed, two 19-year-olds who were doing their national service protect in the state of Israel, happened to be, I think, in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's the only thing that I could really describe, because there didn't seem to be any particular direction. The two individuals who were firing seemed simply to seem to wish to fire just in general towards any civilians. Fortunately, nearby in that area in Hadera, there were undercover security officers who just happened to be dining at a local restaurant. They immediately went into action. Fortunately, they had their personal weapons on them, and they were able to neutralize, is the word that they use these days in the business. They were able to neutralize these two terrorists who were just firing towards people. A passing car was fired at. A cyclist who rode past on his bicycle also happened to come into the gunfire and was injured. So quite a number of people injured, taken to hospital. The two terrorists were killed on the spot, and fortunate for that, because there could have been a lot more casualties if those two individuals, those two security officers, hadn't gone into action right away and very, very quickly responded to the situation. We could have been burying many, many more people today. The two border police officers who were killed, one, a young girl from Netanya, 19-year-old, Shirel Abu Karat, and another, the second one, a 19-year-old Druze border police officer. His name was Yezen Falach. The two of them were both serving the state of Israel, happened to be just in that place in Hadera when that attack took place. Yazin Falah comes from the Druze village of Kisra Sumai in the Galilee, and he had joined the border police only a year ago. Very, very tragic story. And of course, we send our condolences to the families of those who were killed, and we send our best wishes to those who are in hospital recuperating from the gunshot wounds that they received as a result of this very, very vicious, terrible, unjustified incident, clearly premeditated, but unjustified and very, very scary to watch the video footage of how these two guys went about their business.
Absolutely frightening. What does it mean, though, that ISIS, that this is the second incident about that of which responsibility has been claimed by ISIS? Is this a shift that we should be concerned about?
I'm not sure how to interpret this, and I think that there may well be some concern that ISIS supporters are somewhat resurfacing, because at one stage, if we believe the US administration, then ISIS was dead. But apparently the ISIS philosophy continues to live on. And now, as you rightly point out, this is already the second terror incident within the space of a week. Last week's terror incident seemed to be more sponsored by the Palestinian Islamic Jihad organization. But we do know that the individual was certainly a supporter of ISIS. And so clearly the ISIS philosophy continues to live on. It's not clear how the government, the security forces, the intelligence agencies are planning to respond to this. But there is certainly a shift. I mean, after having fortunately not experienced terror incidents for some time, to in the space of a very short period of time like this, is certainly a concerning upshift in things. And obviously the intelligence agencies will be doing their work in order to make sure that this doesn't represent a trend moving forward for the future. And, you know, it's interesting to note that these terror incidents, both last week and this week, were carried out by Israeli nationals. These are Arab Israelis, people who are citizens of the State of Israel, rather than people coming from outside the border, whether they be inhabitants of the Palestinian Authority or whether they be inhabitants, residents of Gaza. That's not the case here. These are Arab Israeli nationals, and it's been interesting how the Arab Knesset parties, members of the Knesset parties of those who represent the Arabs in the Knesset, have come out saying this is not the way of Arab Israelis, and that they've really strongly condemned these actions and called out to the Arab Israeli community not to emulate this trend, not to follow it, that this is an incident, an isolated incident, and does not represent the will of the majority of Arab Israelis in Israel.
Very, very, very scary. Foreign Minister Yair Lapid is hosting a regional summit in the Negev.
Yeah, so this is a very fascinating story from a number of different perspectives. First of all, there is a somewhat personal perspective, because you may recall that I was away for a few days last week, and it just so happened that I was in the Negev last week and staying at exactly the same hotel where the summit is being held yesterday and today. So I had the very good fortune, unbeknowingly, to have done a little bit of a reconnaissance trip. And so I can speak somewhat personally about the area where this particular summit is being held and some of the things that go on around there. But I think what's more important, rather than the area, which is around the area of Kibbutz Steboker, Kibbutz Steboker, most famous at the moment, at least, for the fact that Israel's first Prime Minister, David Ben-Gurion, decided to take up residence there. While he was Prime Minister, he did a trip to the Negev. He saw this pioneering community at Kibbutz Steboker. And when he returned back to Tel Aviv, he wrote them a letter to say, if there is anything that I could feel jealous about, then it is about the lifestyle that you are leading in the Negev. And it was a few years later that he actually became a member of the kibbutz, and he ultimately retired there after his days as prime minister. His home where he lived still available, and I happened to visit there last week, and I managed to see it. So a very, very interesting place. And of course, the Negev, a very, very scenic and beautiful area for those who like desert scenery. But what's more important than all of that is what's going down at the meeting. And this is a very unique situation. I don't think Israel has ever been the host to a summit of this type before. Four Arab foreign ministers coming into Israel to attend this meeting hosted by Israeli Foreign Minister Yair Lapid, and also will include the participation of the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who happens to be in Israel today and will obviously also visit that particular summit. The countries that are being represented at the summit are those countries who signed the Abraham Accords recently. First of all, the United Arab Emirates, Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed of the United Arab Emirates, he is the foreign minister. Also, Foreign Minister of Bahrain, Abdul Latif Al-Zayini, and the Foreign Minister of Morocco, Nasser Bourita, all in attendance at this particular summit, alongside the Egyptian Foreign Minister, Sameh Shoukry, who's also flown in for this particular occasion. On the agenda, Iran and Ukraine. I think we can summarize it pretty much like that. These are all countries who have a big interest and issue and concern about the Iranian nuclear agreement, and it's very pertinent and very appropriate that U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken will attend, because these four foreign ministers alongside Yair Lapid, Israel's foreign minister, will want to tell Antony Blinken in no uncertain terms that they are very much opposed to the Iranian nuclear agreement and the terms that the U.S. has negotiated with Iran. And it's only by the fortune, in a sense, of the intervention of the Ukraine war that the Iranian nuclear agreement has not already been signed, because at the very last minute, with the outbreak of the Ukraine war, Russia decided to demand a few extra clauses be inserted into the agreement pertaining to the sanctions that have now been imposed upon Russia as a result of the war in Ukraine. And those extra clauses have held up the signing of the Iran nuclear agreement between the U.S., between the P5+1 countries and Iran. So if it were not for the intervention of the Ukraine war, we would probably already have seen the signature on that Iran nuclear agreement. And that's given the opportunity for these four Arab foreign ministers to come together with Yair Lapid and, of course, Antony Blinken to talk about what that means for peace and security in this particular region, or potentially what it means for the lack of peace and security in this particular region. We see Iran being very, very active indeed. So those people who felt that the new government headed by Yair Lapid and Naftali Bennett would not be as internationally active on the diplomatic stage as was former Prime Minister Netanyahu, will be wondering today what they were thinking when they felt that before the new government took office. Because I think that, in fairness, and I certainly was one of the skeptics, in fairness, I think the current government has shown themselves to be very active on the international diplomatic front.
Absolutely. There's really, really no doubt. And I think doing incredibly, incredibly well in under very, very difficult conditions. Germany is interested in buying Israel's Arrow 3 system.
As well as the Iron Dome system. And in fact, there is a delegation of senior German politicians who are visiting Israel this week for what's called concrete discussions about the possible procurement of Israeli missile defense systems, including the Arrows 3 and apparently also the Iron Dome. And it's just amazing how the war in Ukraine has suddenly changed the whole constellation of defense systems and defense procurement around the world. All of a sudden, Germany understands that they might need something like the Iron Dome. You know, when we look at the way that the Iron Dome is operated, I could never have imagined a system like the Iron Dome being needed in any other country around the world except Israel. I could never have dreamt that that would be a requirement. And all of a sudden now, a month into the war in Ukraine, the constellation has changed in its entirety. And all of a sudden, a country like Germany feels that they might have the need for an Iron Dome system. And to be honest, we can see why. When you see what's happening in Ukraine, it seems to be a relatively obvious thing that Germany would potentially want to have a system like the Iron Dome and the Arrow 3 system for defense against possible attacks. Of course, the Iron Dome system is defense against short-range rockets, the Arrow 3 system for defense against ballistic missiles. Israel has tried and tested and built and proven these systems. The Iron Dome certainly has its fair share of track record to prove the effectiveness and how it works. It would be very fascinating to see whether the Germans ultimately decide to buy these systems. And just before we go, Howard, I just wanted to mention that one of the last things that we spoke about last week before we headed into the weekend was the Jerusalem Marathon.
Yes.
And you mentioned the fact that the weather was going to be really distressing for those people who are not diehard runners. It was indeed cold and wet. But I think the most fascinating thing about the Jerusalem Marathon and the way that things ended up was that the women's race was won by a Ukrainian refugee in Israel, Valentina.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's incredible.
Valentina Verska, who escaped from Ukraine when the war broke out to Poland with her daughter, has been brought to Israel. She is already a well-known marathon runner. This wasn't just a Friday morning jog out in the park for her. She's obviously a well-known runner, somebody who has credentials and a lot of history and good records in marathon running. Her time 2 hours 45 minutes, eat your heart out. Those who are marathon runners, an amazing time in cold and wet conditions in the hilly Jerusalem marathon. So yeah, a great result with a Ukrainian refugee winning that particular event.
What an amazing story. What a way to end the Israel Report. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45.